JC Corcoran Podcast.
I'm going to try to make it through this sportscast after watching that segment on TV.
Well, you know, 90 hours of surgery to separate those two.
Siamese twins. Yes. I guess you could say after the operation they had splitting headaches. The look Karen gave me.
I know. Sometimes there's just no hope. I always have women, I love it, come up to me at these rallies like, I don't know how you do it.
They're actually...
Get on the scissor lift?
I know you've seen... The older ladies who are attached at the head, JC, we were just talking about it. And it's really sad because one's in a wheelchair and the
so
other
one... So sad that way you're laughing?
No, I'm laughing because the one time was talking about getting married. Like, what did you say?
She's saying his twins joined at the head.
Yeah. Okay.
And one of them's in a wheelchair and one isn't?
Yes.
One of us has an aching back at the end of the day.
My God. Every day.
And the one's talking about getting married.
He's so optimistic.
I'm like, I hope the other one likes her brother-in-law.
Oh.
I'm just picturing this guy proposing to her. And the other one's going, say yes, say yes.
We have reached an all-time
get married.
World.
About 6 months into the marriage. Do we have to take her everywhere? Everywhere we go.
I could just see the marriage counselor. You two need some privacy. You need some time alone. Oh, my God.
Siamese twin jokes. We've reached an all-time low.
Hey, you want to see a movie tonight? No, you're going anyway. You don't have a choice. Oh, my God. I can't even.
Honey, you're hogging the covers again.
No, it's me.
You blame me for everything. It's her.
Say yes. Oh, my
we
God.
We might not get another chance like this. I just don't know if he's my type.
Oh, my God.
You know, I could say yes, and then the ideal guy could just walk by tomorrow. Then what?
You want to go to a baseball game? Yeah, tomorrow's a doubleheader.
Brian, stop.
We should get it free.
You see the husband going through the paper every weekend looking for 2-for-1 sales.
What if only one got a haircut that day?
Hello, you're on the air.
Karen, how do you put up with this
Thank
every
you.
Day?
Thank you.
Hello.
Can you imagine getting a blow up?
He's talking about their hair. I was talking about the haircuts.
Yeah, right. Blow dry, you meant to say. Hello, you're on the air.
You know why Europe is the favorite vacation spot for Siamese twins?
Here it comes, folks.
Because the other one gets to drive.
When they were little, the parents didn't have to say, look both ways before crossing the street.
Brian! This being Holy Week and all. Good Friday.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. All right.
We're not making fun of their misfortune.
No, we've just told every joke we can think of.
Not making fun of their misfortune. It's just... You know, I'm sorry, as an outsider on something like this, it just does seem to be almost inconceivable that a Siamese twin would... We can, the other one would say, hey, I saw him first!
I saw him first.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? like deja vu all over again.
It's the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. How you doing, kids? JC Corcoran Podcast here at jconline.com. Let's pick up where we were 2 days ago with this Ellie Kemper story. First of all, let me start at the end and work back. This is going to blow over. It's going to go away. There are people in the three-point stance who live amongst us, right? And they are just in the three-point stance waiting for somebody to fire the gun so they can cancel somebody. You know, we used to call it shunning, whatever the case may be. But this whole idea of taking somebody's livelihood away for one's own personal enjoyment has gotten so far out of hand. And there are people who do experience some sort of pleasure out of seeing somebody lose their job, lose their livelihood, because they had something to do with it, because they piled on at a time where somebody was vulnerable. Here's the story. Ellie Kemper, star of movies, TV shows, all that sort of stuff. Okay, so she's from a very wealthy family. Her father is reportedly worth $420 million. She was the VP Fair Queen, and a lot of people don't like the VP organization, the Veiled Prophet, because it has roots in racism and bigotry and just creepiness. And that's not my opinion. That's a matter of fact. You go back and look at the origins of the Veiled Prophet outfit, and they were not nice people. I've had my own clashes with the Veiled Prophet organization. I started a radio station in 1987, right about the time of the Veiled Prophet parade through the streets of downtown. And we got ourselves a bus and we decorated it. And we had people who were going to be in the parade. And I was set up to broadcast from the bus as the bus was going through the streets of downtown. Something rubbed somebody the wrong way about me being involved. Perhaps my numerous commentaries about the Veiled Prophet organization, which were not particularly kind. There was a broadcast executive in St. Louis back in the middle 1980s whose daughter became the Veiled Prophet Queen. And that was the year that I said that she was so ugly for the first time they kept the veil over her face instead of the Veiled Prophet. Truth be known, I'd never seen the woman in my life, so I don't know. She might have looked like Kim Basinger for all I know. She might have been a knockout. You got a whole Megan Fox thing going or something, you know? I didn't care. It was just a joke. That's all. It didn't have anything to do with the girl herself. It had to do with the competitive situation we were in with the guy who was this broadcast executive from the other radio station. I also pointed out a couple of times, there was one year that somehow the bridge from East St. Louis mysteriously was shut down, closed, so that people of color from East St. Louis couldn't walk across the bridge and right onto the VP Fair fairgrounds. There was one year where, you know, they hand out those maps with the little caricatures. So if it's an ice cream place, there might be a little picture of an ice cream cone. They have like a little picture of a porta potty for where they have a lot of the bathrooms. A picture of a giant bratwurst where the concession stands are. But somehow on the map, the little police substation, so if you had some sort of problem that required police intervention or assistance, you would go to this little police substation. It was a picture of a pig. I'm not making this up. It was just amazing. Mother Nature saw all this going on and said, I think I'll hit it with some lightning and maybe about 4 inches of rain in about a 2-hour period, chase everybody off the fairgrounds. And that's exactly what happened. And for some reason, people would run to the arch to try to shelter themselves from a thunderstorm. And it was not uncommon for somebody to get either hit by lightning or, you know, grazed by it. Arch grounds were in terrible shape afterwards because, you know, all the grass was matted down. And then if you have mud, too, because of the thunderstorms and people walking on that, I mean, that's how you ruin a lawn. The arch grounds, that's basically what it is. It's a giant lawn. I was critical of a lot of the acts that came in 1988, and they bring in the grassroots. the grassroots! And there are a lot of, you know, squeaky, clean country acts. You know, VP Fair organization proud to announce the entertainment this year on the main stage is Donna Fargo. So the VP organization certainly had a reason, shall we say, for them to not like me, but I wasn't doing anything illegal. So we find out the day of the Veiled Prophet parade through the streets of downtown that they're claiming that it is a private parade. It's a private parade, and we can't be in it. We're like, you're going through the streets of downtown, and that's a private parade? Yes, you can't be in it. Then we find out that their plan is to have me arrested. This was in 1987. And by the way, this was in the paper and everything. TV stations didn't really get on it because, you know, the TV stations are in cahoots with the Veiled Prophet organization. They do this thing every year. It's sort of like, you got to come to the fair. Oh, gosh, got to the fair. Look, we're broadcasting live from the fair. Isn't it great? Look at this fair. Get your asses down here immediately. And then a couple of days after, they start doing exactly what I did, start pointing out all the things that sort of went wrong, all the things that, you know, got ruined, all the problems they had, all the racial undertones, and then those crowd estimates. 42.7 million people attended over the three-day fair. And you're like, how are you coming up with these numbers? Well, we have a grid system. You fly over it, and you look, and then you say there's 50 people in this grid, so multiply that times 600,000, and we came up with the number. It was just laughable. It was totally laughable as to how many people were coming down to the fair. This was primarily in the 80s. So anyhow, the parade is scheduled to start like 6 o'clock or something. And we, you know, find out that the St. Louis police are intending to have me arrested at the behest of the Veiled Prophet organization. So the brilliance of this managerial move pulled me off of the bus before I was ever even on it. They put me on a street corner. I think it was near the Hooters or something. The Hooters wasn't there at the time, but it was the parade was going to come right past. And I got a wireless microphone. And just to be on the safe side, the radio station hired a video crew to videotape me for the entire broadcast, just in case anybody said I was doing something illegal, or in case the St. Louis Police Department decided to have me arrested for absolutely no reason whatsoever, we would have video of this. And sure enough, we found out that the Veiled Prophet organization, with help from the St. Louis Police Department, stripped the bus of all of its signage, threw everybody off the bus except for the driver, and said, there you go, now you can be in the parade. Hearty, har, har. So basically an empty bus with nothing on it was in the Veiled Prophet parade that year. They did not arrest me. I was not arrested. They didn't have the guts to try to pull something while the video cameras were recording everything. And we sort of did it, and that was the end of it. I remember Bill McClellan, the columnist for the Post-Dispatch, wrote a pretty lengthy column about this whole thing. And I should probably pull that up and put it on my Facebook page or something like that. So back to the Ellie Kemper thing. So she's 19 years old, and they make her the VP Fair Queen back in, I think it was 1999. Now she's 41. She's successful. She's got a successful show or two, and people are saying, well, you know, you were part of that whole thing. As suddenly across the nation, people find out about this dirty little secret that's been going on in St. Louis for the last, you know, 100 years or whatever. And they're like, well, so wait a minute. So the Veiled Prophet was like a racist organization, and they were, you know, hanging black people, and you know, just a Ku Klux Klan was involved. I got a friend in Florida who contacted me yesterday and said, the Ku Klux Klan in St. Louis? I'm like, yeah. And so now you got all these people trying to cancel Ellie Kemper. Well, you're 19 years old. Your parents put you in a nice gown, throw you out there. And maybe at 19, you're not as aware of things like deeply rooted racially oriented organizations in your hometown. Again, they call it cancel culture now. We used to call it a mob mentality. I think the whole thing's going to blow over. We are at the midway point of the podcast, and this is usually where I play something for you of a comedic nature, or maybe something from the archives. This one takes a little bit of explanation. Bob and Ray were a comedy duo that were on the radio in Boston back in the day, and they recorded albums and did shows and stuff like that. Ray Goulding and Bob Elliott. Bob Elliott, the father of Chris Elliott, who fans of David Letterman will recognize as the the guy under the seats and stuff like that. the regulator guy. And of course, he was in There's Something About Mary, had a TV show for a while. Chris Elliott, that's his dad, Bob Elliott, Bob and Ray. And normally when you're going to interview somebody, you get a bunch of notes and you look them up on Wikipedia and you research stuff so that you have really, really good questions and so that you don't say something stupid. You do your research. You just don't, you're not thrust into a situation where you're interviewing somebody and you don't know anything about them. The premise of this bit is that something happens and the guy who's conducting the interview has not had an opportunity to meet or to do any research and is basically thrust into the interview with no information, and it's time to start the interview. You're on the air. Go! Here's Bob and Ray.
This is a surprise time for me because I haven't had an opportunity to meet and talk with our next guest. But would you sit there now and tell us your name, please?
Harlow P. Whitcomb.
And where are you from?
From Glens Falls.
New York.
New York.
And what do you do?
I am the president and recording
secretary.
Secretary of the STOA.
What does that stand for?
Slow Talkers of America. We believe
in speaking slowly,
in forming
your words, thoughts,
our ideas and opinions clearly before
speaking
we speak. We are here
in New York City.
In the city of New York. Attending
a convention.
Our annual
convention.
Membership
convention.
Convention. All of our members, all 200
members
and 50
members,
seven
members,
are here
speaking
talking
slowly so that you'll never be misunderstood,
as opposed to the members of the F.
T-O-A.
T-O-A.
O-A.
A. The fast.
Talkers of America.
Talkers.
Of America.
Of America.
America.
Our credo.
Is to speak slowly.
Goes something like this.
Would you lower the curtain, please?
We're
making me a nervous wreck.
That is one of my all-time favorite comedic bits right there from Bob and Ray. All right, let's see what else is going on. Jessica Chastain, Academy Award winner, is going to play Tammy Faye Baker in an upcoming movie. And she says there were things about Tammy Faye Baker that apparently we missed and that her heart was full of love, and on we go. Kim Kardashian hit 225 million Instagram followers. 225 million. There's only about 345 million people in this country. She's got like two-thirds of them because she's pretty and has a great ass and made a... Nah, never mind. Jimmy Kimmel Tonight has Michael Che. I don't know what the SNL people are going to do. We did the story a couple of days ago about like 6 or 7 cast members that could be leaving, are rumored to be leaving. Amongst them, Cecily Strong, Adi Bryant, who I just love, by the way, and Kenan Thompson, who's been there like since they put up the building. And they got good people coming up and everything, but you lose your nucleus of the show. You're asking for big trouble. Ancient bones were found near Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's house. It's no way to talk about the Queen. Good morning, everybody. A source says Wedding Crashers 2 is going to film this summer with Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, Rachel McAdams, and Isla Fisher all returning. Anderson Cooper, the only celebrity birthday today. He's 54. 75 years ago today, 1946, Jacques Haim, a French fashion designer, debuted a two-piece bathing suit in Paris and named it the Bikini after the Bikini Atoll Islands in the South Pacific where the atomic bomb testing was going on. He chose the name because he thought the bikini was so scandalous that people would react the way they did to the atomic bomb being dropped. It depends on who's wearing it. You could still have that effect. 51 years ago today, so another one of my favorite rock and roll stories. It was 1970 and Ray Davis of the Kinks. And by the way, apparently we've been mispronouncing his name all these years because it's spelled D-A-V-I-E-S and everybody says Ray Davies of the Kinks. Well, it turns out it's Davis and it's the British pronunciation of D-A-V-I-E-S. So I say Davis because that's how he says it. Anyhow, in 1970, the Kinks record Lola, but the BBC did not allow commercial references in songs, so they weren't going to play the song because it had the line in it about Coca-Cola. So Ray Davis has to fly from New York to London to change one word. Coca-Cola became Cherry Cola. 1988 on this date, 33 years ago, Tom Hanks and the comedy Big was released. That property, that script and everything, was originally owned by Robert De Niro. And they were going to shoot it as a very, very dark movie. He had his hands on the property for like 10 years and just couldn't seem to get it made. And along comes Penny Marshall in a different studio and says, no, we're going to shoot this a different way. Instead of it being like a dark movie, we're going to shoot it like as a romantic comedy. And the rest is history. The pandemic caused a major drop-off in public displays of affection, the old PDA. But will it last? Because a new survey asked people to rank the most annoying or uncomfortable types of PDA. Now, my first reaction to this is, what business is it of yours that somebody is making out with somebody or just, you know, having public displays of affection? Heaven forbid somebody should be in love. Number one, openly making out in public, talking to each other in a baby voice. Well, that is annoying. Number three, putting your hand or arm under their shoulder. I don't even understand that. Holding hands, touching their butt, one person sitting on another person's lap, using pet names in front of people like Honey or Pookie or Schnicky Lumps or Cum Bubbles or whatever. Proposing in public. 1 in 4 said watching it makes them uncomfortable. Number 9, a peck on the lips. Number 10, staring at them too much or looking deep into one another's eyes. Again, what business is it of yours? Sex is important, but is it really the end all? Half of people in a relationship claim their current partner is the worst sex they ever had. And it's not clear if they've always felt that way or if things just cooled down after years of marriage. The average person said they've had 7 really bad sexual encounters in their life, and a third of us have fallen asleep during sex. The poll also looked at sex injuries, and 57% of people who've hurt themselves said it happened in the shower. They have those suction cups now that you can buy. It's like a little handle with 2 suction cups. You stick that on the tile in the shower, and then you got something you're going to hold on to. And there's even a thing where you can put your foot. And our Karen's going the way of extinction. Only 325 babies were named Karen, born in the USA last year, and it's now the 831st most popular name for a girl. That's the lowest it's been since 1927, for obvious reasons. A guy in Florida facing criminal animal cruelty charges for killing an iguana last year, and he tried to get the charges dropped by citing the state's Stand Your Ground law. A judge rejected it, though. He's facing up to 5 years in prison for killing an iguana. Florida is a tough town. Somebody figured out you can trick your iPhone into recognizing you with a face mask on by using the alternate appearance feature in your settings. You just have to put your mask on while it's scanning your face, and then you don't have to take your mask off when you are using the facial recognition feature on your phone. Information that would have helped us a year ago. And yesterday, a major announcement in sports is Mike Krzyzewski, Chicago boy, by the way, announced that he is going to retire after the upcoming season, which will be his 42nd. He's got five NCAA championships. A little clip from our archives, the JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day.
I'm doing great, and St. Louis, one of my favorite cities, even though I'm a Cub fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll explain that, though, because you...
We lose all the time to you guys.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Chicago.
Ever since we gave you Lou Brock for Ernie Broglio, I still haven't gotten over that.
You can tell that a guy is famous when his last name is spelled Krzyzewski, and the world has basically learned how to pronounce his name. How long did it take?
It took a while, and it's really, to me, one of the more remarkable things that has happened.
Man's got Final Fours, NCAA championships, and I think the most amazing thing is they know how to pronounce my name.
Well, they, you know, especially in the South, where Krzyzewski sounds like 20 letters instead of 10. And it shows that if you're out there long enough and your name's out there long enough, people learn how to do it. They can pronounce it better if they don't look at it.
You're right.
If you look at it, when I'm introduced for a speaking engagement or anything like that, I tell people, don't look at the name. And says, well, you got to look at the name. I said, don't look at it. You'll never be able to do it.
That is hysterical. Coach K has a brand new book called 5-Point Play. We're going to talk about that. Tell me what the mood was like and what the challenges were and basically what you walked into in the spring of 1980 when you first came to Duke.
Well, I came into a situation where people perceived us to be talented, but they did not have... they had two poor recruiting classes, and I knew it was going to be a rebuilding job, and we did it. And getting Johnny Dawkins, my first McDonald's All-American, was the key thing. That was the key thing. And since then, I've had a number of McDonald's All-Americans, and as a result, I've become a much better basketball coach.
Yeah, right. And Mayor McCheese is in double figures now. No, I'm just kidding. You know, they always talk about college football and basketball coaches being great motivators, and I have a real low tolerance for this whole motivational speaking racket going on because, for example, I have two speeds, work and vacation, and I'm suspicious of anybody who needs to be motivated. I guess, though, in the real world, when you're dealing with, you know, 17, 18, 19, and 20-year-old boys who have a lot of other things on their mind and distractions and girls and all that kind of stuff, I guess motivation is really part of it, isn't it?
Well, motivation is good. Even though somebody who's consistently good, it's good to be around other people who are consistently good because all of a sudden you might be consistently excellent as a result of just being in that neighborhood. So I believe in motivation. I'm not necessarily like a rah-rah guy, you know, like I think that can give you like an instant fix, so to speak, of motivation. But rather, to me, the best way to be motivated is to have everybody feel like it's theirs. And that's what we try to do with our team. They're not playing for me. They're playing for us. And what we do on the court is everyone on the court, everyone involved with our team takes ownership of that. To me, that's the type of motivation I like to talk about, where people go beyond their limits. You get people to do more than they had been doing and to like it. And not be jealous of someone else who's doing it. And in a team concept, the ability of keeping away jealousy from your team is paramount. And in our book, we show that Shane Battier, who was our primary leader last year and our top player along with Jason Williams, how they created an environment where it was okay for other people to be terrific. They created what I call a jealous-free zone. And when you have that in talent, and enthusiasm and all that kind of stuff, you got a chance to win the national championship, which those kids did.
Talking with Coach Mike Krzyzewski, you're not just a coach. Sometimes you're a coach, sometimes you're a father, sometimes you're a teacher, a friend. I mean, sometimes you're the sheriff. You got lots of duties. Talk a little bit about those duties as they apply to the experience of the student athlete in school, but also how that stuff is going to resurface throughout life.
Well, hopefully you're not the sheriff too often, but
bad check.
Really, it starts in recruiting. A lot of people say, you know, in recruiting, you're trying to sell something. And for me, it's the start of our relationship. And if that youngster comes to Duke, then it's the start of a lifetime relationship with that youngster and his family. And it should be based on truth. It should be based on the fact of you communicating with one another and knowing about one another. I mean, if I just coach Jason Williams out on the basketball court, I can only do so good of a job. But if I get to know who Jason Williams is and he gets to know me, it goes both ways, then when he does get to the basketball court, there's an element of trust between the two of us that can create an environment which produces excellence. And that's what we're trying to do. And hopefully then that relationship goes on forever. But especially while they're at Duke, it's my responsibility to get to know them. And their responsibility to let me get to know them, where they're straightforward with me. And we have a rule on our team that when we talk to one another, we look each other in the eye and there's no lies. You don't lie to one another. And that produces trust. And
we have that same rule here on the Breakfast Club. Karen, you look beautiful today.
Oh, thanks.
By the way, Coach, we have less than a minute left here. Change one thing about college basketball. One thing that you could change if you had a magical power to be able to do so.
I would make a separate arm, make it sports specific in the NCAA. In other words, we have rules that govern all sports, and there's no body that just governs college basketball. And it's too big and it's too fast and there are too many things hitting it. I think under the NCAA umbrella, if we had a group that ran college basketball on a day-to-day basis, we would be much better off, especially in this changing environment of high school, college, and pros interacting as closely as they do today. It's a different culture.
Okay, now give me that same answer in Polish.
Krzyzewski.
God bless you. And I'm sure you've never heard that one before. All right, the book is called 5-Point Play. Coach K is the author, and congratulations on your success at Duke. Thanks a lot, Coach.
Thank you very much.
I don't know how nice a guy he is if I'm one of his players, and I turn the ball over with 5 seconds to go in a game that we should have won. I'm sure he's not very pleasant then, but boy, to talk to him. What a cool guy. What a great conversation with Mike Krzyzewski, giving it up after 42 seasons in NCAA basketball. And that's it. That wraps up our podcast for the 3rd of June, 2021. Thanks for spreading the word about the J.C. Quarkman podcast here at jcontheline.com. In the meantime, we've eaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Quarkman podcast.